Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We are Groundworks, Inc. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. Heritage Radio broadcasts from two shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. And We Dig Plants is engineered by Jack Inslee. Yay, Jack! We have a really, really fun guest this week, Helen Yost, from Raleigh, North Carolina. She's going to talk about her award-winning book, Plants with Benefits, published by St. Lin's Press. But Helen is more than an author. She is a garden coach, garden designer, blogger, stylist, and all-around amazing person to know when it comes to gardens. We'll bring Helen on in a minute. First, we need to do our horticultural honoree of the week.
Thank you, Jack. So, as Helen is calling in from North Carolina, Alice and I thought we would have someone from North Carolina as our horticultural honoree, J.C. Ralston. So who was J.C. Ralston? Well, a very important person in 20th century horticulture. And this Oklahoma boy accomplished quite a lot in his rather short life. The information that we're going to share with you is from the North Carolina State University website, by the way, which is a great site about J.C. Ralston, about horticulture in general. Few people would have imagined when J.C. Ralston arrived at the Department of Horticulture Science at North Carolina State University in 1975 that he would become a major force behind the horticultural renaissance in the U.S. nursery industry. J.C., intensely dedicated to his craft, is credited with introducing and promoting more plants into contemporary horticulture than anyone else during the latter part of the 20th century. That is a lot.
Yeah, that's a huge statement.
For this business. After having established the NCSU Arboretum in 1976, now named after him, the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, J.C. began mentoring scores of promising students and making connections among plantsmen, botanical gardens, arboreta, nursery owners, and landscapers. During the next two decades, until his untimely death in an automobile accident, his effect on horticulturists and plant lovers extended from the Southeast through the U.S. and beyond. J.C. became widely recognized as a dynamo in promoting and introducing such new plants as Magnolia grandiflora, Little Jam, and others that changed our landscape and brought new excitement to gardening. Now, by the time he arrived at North Carolina State, and this is a really interesting statistic, J.C. had concluded that in any given region of the United States, a traditional palette of only 40 shrubs and trees comprised more than 90% of landscape plantings.
Boring.
Think about that, you know? Exactly. Incredibly boring. These plants were familiar to the public, and thus nurserymen promoted them.
It's those foundation plantings.
Yeah.
That,
so he wanted to go beyond that.
The 50s and the 60s.
Exactly. You know? And then he also noticed that Americans tended to focus on springtime gardening, overlooking the other seasons that are just as beautiful and have all kinds of plant material that really shines during those other three periods. So he pushed for plants such as winter flowering apricot, magnolia, and witch hazel. And he promoted plants that expanded the possibilities of gardening into autumn with beautyberry, autumn witch hazel, and the tea olive osmanthus fragrance. J.C. developed the Arboretum's mission as the promotion of a greater diversity of plants better adapted for urban and residential landscapes. But besides that, on the professional level, he also, according to his biographer, Bobby J. Ward, who actually wrote a book about him called Chlorophyll in His Veins.
Right.
if you really want to go deep into J.C. Rawlinson's life, he started a kind of informal society called the Lavender and the Labiatia Society. You know, he kind of became aware of his homosexuality a little bit later in life, and he wanted to create a community of people that supported that within the horticulture community. So he had these kind of informal meetings, and mm-hmm. he was a very interesting character. So read up on it if you want to learn more about him. Read Chlorophyll in His Veins. The Arboretum itself is an incredible place to visit. It's a nationally acclaimed garden with the most diverse collection of cold hardy temperate zone plants in the southeastern United States, and it's part of the Department of Horticulture Science at North Carolina State University. Now, while it's primarily a working research and teaching garden, it's also designed, you know, for the public to visit. It has plants especially adapted to the North Carolina Piedmont, you know, and they're always looking for new plants and studying new plants that would work well in southern gardens.
It really is the place to go in North Carolina.
Yeah.
It really is like the destination.
And to think about it, it only really got started in the 70s.
Yeah.
So I think of Ralston almost like an E.H. Wilson of our time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
He did, I think, almost as much as Wilson.
Absolutely.
You know?
And the promotion of plants.
Exactly.
And the awareness of there are other plants in the world besides 40 foundation plants.
Yes. Beyond the yews and the arborvitae.
So in the Southern tradition, we're fortunate enough to talk with our guest, Helen Yost. She is a sponsor of the Arboretum and she serves on its board. Welcome, Helen.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Yeah. How's the weather down there?
Well, today is warm and rainy, and a cold front's coming, so
yeah.
I like it. I can take it. I can't take the darkness.
I know.
I'll take any weather.
Hasn't it been a glorious, glorious fall, though?
It's been the best.
I mean, so warm and so, like, grass is still green. It's gorgeous outside.
We've been very lucky this year so far.
And thanks to JC, everybody's kind of gardening more into the fall, and we're leaving behind the spring, not being the only season to garden.
Right.
I know.
Exactly.
I hate when people give up and they sort of like, that happens to our clients too. They're like, oh, you know, I really don't go out. I mean, it is New York and it is Zone 7, but, you know, the fall is a great time to be in the garden, and they kind of are not wanting,
well,
you know.
But I think that goes directly back to like marketing initiatives and Home Depot and Lowe's, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's unfortunately the public gets their awareness from mass culture and mass consumerism.
But it doesn't help too, Alice, that they start putting Christmas decorations out in October.
I
so
know.
People are thinking, okay, gardening season's over. I've got to start putting out, you know, lights and fake trees. I mean,
exactly.
To me, that speeding up of the of the natural cycle is disturbing. You know, Helen.
Did I touch a sore point?
It pisses me off, you know. And I love Christmas and I love Halloween, you know.
Yeah, but place and time,
exactly.
You know?
Well,
yeah,
so.
It is. It's the time and place, and everyone seems to be ready to go to that place in the spring because they're itching to get out of the cold and the dark and everything else. And the garden centers are beefing up for that, and basically not buying after that. So
right.
And you know, working on the spontaneous buy.
Yeah.
If we could get people to the garden center, they might enjoy a beauty berry that they wouldn't have otherwise known about.
I know.
Because it's not going to look very nice in the spring, so it's really kind of hard to sell it, you know. Not that it looks bad, but it doesn't have its glory until the fall.
Right. But, you know, a lot of us don't have glory until later in life.
I hear you. I'm counting on mine still coming.
Exactly. Well, let me tell our listeners a little bit more about you. You are a garden stylist and a writer. You travel the world visiting public and private gardens. Your work has appeared in Country Gardens magazine, Better Homes and Gardens, Martha Stewart Living, and you've written a previous book, in addition to the book we're going to talk about today, called Gardening with Confidence, 50 Ways to Add Style for Personal Creativity. And the book that we're going to talk about today, Plants with Benefits, really has no time frame, as in like spring gardening or fall gardening. It really spans all seasons. And what I love about it is that you really isolate the plants and you talk about their growing conditions, their how-to, technical aspects, but then you also talk about how they can be used throughout the year in any season and what their usefulness is and the history. It's a really fun book.
Yes, and don't forget the elephant in the room.
Yes, sex.
It's aphrodisiac. Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, plants with benefits is like friends with benefits.
That's right.
Right. So, so there's... We really enjoy that kind of randy talk. So don't worry, you can let it rip here.
Yeah. So
your book, there is no season for sex, so everything is good here.
That's
good,
right. That's good, right. Good. It goes on all the time. So Plants with Benefits was reviewed in the Times pretty close to when we met you, Helen, at the GWA conference, right?
Yes, right about then. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And here's the intro from that article. Helen Yost did not set out, as she said recently, to write a horticultural Kama Sutra. It was sort of an accident. Ms. Yost, a garden writer, was researching an article on avocados when she learned that the fruit was considered an aphrodisiac. What makes it so, she wondered. The nutrients? The shape? Bingo. Turns out their reputation dates to the Aztecs, who marveled at how avocados grew in pairs and named the plant the testicle tree. The article goes on further to say, I was fascinated to learn that during the harvest, the ancient Aztecs would lock up their virgin daughters, Ms. Yost said. That's a very powerful image. So tell us in your words how you selected the plants to research.
Well, once I realized that there was something to write about, because I love history anyway, but I've never really explored plants and history. I don't know why. I just kind of hadn't gotten that part yet. Like Elizabeth Lawrence's with rock gardens, if you garden long enough, you know, everybody will be a rock gardener. Well, I kind of feel that way about any kind of gardening that we do.
Yeah.
And now it was my turn to look at plants and their aphrodisiac attributes. So I started with the avocado, and then I went down to however many I could find. There's a couple I left out.
Yeah.
For reasons that I thought, well, it just didn't have a strong historical lore. But if it had a good lore, I put it in the book. And there are about 45 of them, and they were broken down into four categories. The first being shape and scent.
Uh-huh.
So the banana is the poster child for shape. Every person is going to have some kind of sophomoric comment to make when holding and eating a banana.
Yes.
I watch my kids do it. It's really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that how they teach?
And I'll never look at a banana again.
Yeah, that's how they teach kids to put a condom on,
over
the banana. Right.
So anyway, here we got the banana, and it's clearly a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
You have like the ginger, which is called the man root. You know, it's it looks like the man.
Uh-huh.
And the more in Chinese culture, the more it looks like a male member,
uh-huh.
the higher the price is. So, we had this kind of history of, if this, so like the doctrine of signatures, if this this looks like this body part, it's going to help this body part.
Right.
So like the asparagus, the carrots, the cucumber, all that.
Yes.
Is, so it's not, it's the way it looks and not
the way it looks. That's right. One of the four. The second is heat. And this is really interesting. And I didn't even consider this, but I've experienced it, just, TMI. But that is, certain foods put you in a receptive mode, sort of like cayenne pepper. It's heating the body and making you receptive.
Uh-huh.
Chocolate is that way. Chocolate works so well, you don't even need a partner.
Yeah, well, look at the marketing that happens around chocolate, right?
Yeah.
Those commercials are all
like women alone.
Yes.
Eating their bonbons, like in ecstasy, having you know.
And last night, speaking of spice, last night, Alice, I just want to point out, Alice participated in on a chili cook-off, and she won 2 awards.
I did.
Yes. And
congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you.
And
I was thinking about you, actually. I was thinking about your pepper section in the book.
Yes, because, Helen, there was one guy that called it the fertility chili. There was a lot of spice in the room. And he said,
I love that.
Yeah. And he said that after he participated in the contest last year with his spicy chili, his wife finally got pregnant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that night. He was like, that night we
you know,
it
was baby. It was a fertility, so he calls it the fertility chili. But it speaks to what you were saying, the spices. And last night, there were so many chilies with chocolate in there. And
chocolate is a secret ingredient to a lot of people's chili.
Yeah, and cinnamon.
It's adding to that receptivity and... you can't go wrong with adding chocolate to anything anyway.
Right.
So now we got to mark this down in 9 months. This will all happen in New York City. Forget the blackout. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, there was so much, like, how do I say this nicely? Flatulence from the chili. There probably wasn't a lot of sex happening.
There was also bourbon. A lot of bourbon last night.
Yeah, a lot of bourbon.
So,
and,
this didn't make the book, but way beyond any the Greeks and the Romans even. That used to be an attractive trait. Where they decided that wasn't a turn on anymore. I'm glad they stuck to that. But it used to be, you know, considered a compliment to the chef belching and black ones.
Right.
Yeah. So, but it used to be considered an aphrodisiac as well.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay. So
that didn't make the book.
So we have form follows function. We have the shape, and then we have heat. And what are the other two categories?
The next one is hormones, which is another very interesting subject because there are several plants that mimic human hormones. One of the subtle things I have in the book, I don't know if you noticed or not, but I have either the male symbol or the female symbol, and some chapters have both.
Right.
Yeah. And it's really to identify if it works for both male and female or if it's just specifically being one gender.
Right.
But for example, honey is rich in, I didn't know this, estrogen, so it's more receptive for women than it is for men. Now, of course, honey's not a plant, but it's made by plants, so I felt like I could include that in there.
Yeah.
Papaya is another one.
Now, I love the papaya.
Papaya is interesting because I thought it would have made the... suggestion, the visual, because of multiple seeds. It was very common back then to see a lot of seeds, and if you eat it, then you're likely to produce a lot of seeds. I don't know if you ever watched that Netflix. I don't know. I can't remember who produced it, but it was The Tudors.
Yeah.
Oh,
very
yeah,
fun,
of course.
Very racy.
Yes,
yes. I had to do a lot of research watching that while King Henry VIII had his shirt off, and he was getting ready to bed his mistress. And he was cutting into a pomegranate.
Yeah, the pomegranate is like the classic Greek
fertility.
Yeah.
I had to watch that over and over and over again until I finally got it right.
I have a movie for you that involved that. Well, papaya is in the title. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's kind of a sexy movie. It's called The Scent of Green Papaya. Have you seen that?
No.
Yes, it's an Asian film. I don't know if it's Chinese or Indonesian. I'm not sure, but it's called The Scent of Green Papaya, and papaya figures into the story, and it's a very sensual film.
Well, Helen,
tell us, I've written it down.
Tell us why you can't say papaya when you visit Cuba.
I'm not sure I can say. Okay, so I'm blushing big time, and I'm having a hot flash, as you asked. So.
You need some honey.
It's an affectionate term. It's an affectionate term for the woman's...
Private parts.
Thank you very much.
My
little papaya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It means vagina. I'll just say it.
Yeah, vagina.
I see.
But it's used in a nice way. Unlike some of the words that we... have developed that are not very nice.
Right.
So if somebody calls you a papaya, that's a compliment. Somebody calls you a papaya, that's a compliment?
We're not talking about masochism.
I guess I'm going to be totally digressing here, but I went to graduate school in London, and I'm taking a lab class, and I'm sitting on these lab benches, and I stand up, and I go, oh, my gosh, that really hurts my fanny. And then everyone looks at me like I'm a foreigner, which I am, and then I learn that that's the papaya equivalent in Britain.
Well, when I was in Ireland,
oh my God.
When I was in Ireland, you don't ask, can I get a ride? You say, can I get a lift? Because it's the same thing.
The answer is always yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because God forbid you're hitchhiking and you ask for a ride. You know, that's just as like raunchy as it gets.
Good to know.
So you also, okay, so we have heat.
Shape.
Hormones,
and then finally health. Now, every plant probably could fall under some health category, but I chose the ones that had a great historical lore. Arugula, I think, is a fun one because it's called the rocket, and we don't really think about why it's called the rocket. It does come up fast. That probably was part of the play onwards. But way back in the first century, Pliny the Elder, he considered it a libido booster and prescribed it to many of his patients. And Virgil wrote that the rocket excites the sexual desire of drowsy people.
Ah.
So, you know, you can be introduced in the diet in a lot of ways, like a pesto or eating it raw or just mixed in with other greens if you find it too bitter. So I find that as a pesto, it really does kind of tone it down.
Yeah, because it is strong. It's
peppery. It is very peppery.
I really should stop feeding it to my adolescent son then. He does really like it. Helen.
His hormones are raging enough.
He loves arugula.
Yeah, I think he does.
I'm going to save it for his father.
Yeah. So this book must have been a blast to write and research.
It was. It was, you know, it's a major departure from anything I've ever done because I really, truly am a lifestyle writer. And from a gardener standpoint, I'm a wildlife gardener. And the book was originally going to be the benefits for wildlife plants, host plants, nectar plants, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then we took it further, you know, with the play on words and just decided to have fun with it. And I am game for stuff like that. I'm pretty easy. So, and then, you know, you learned a lot about just the history of some of the plants, like saffron.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I look at that saffron now and I go, oh, my gosh, that's just a sexy looking thing.
Right.
Cleopatra believed in it so much so that if she was getting ready to have a tryst or, you know, conquer the world, that kind of thing, she bathed in it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the most expensive. It's one of the most expensive spices in the world.
And it has a very...
in now. And can you imagine, though, you know, if you're, you know, the ruler of Egypt, you just get however many little vials you need.
So tell us a little bit more about saffron. Tell us about the story of King Henry VIII.
Oh, yes.
And the saffron.
With regards to...
adultery?
I'm sorry?
With regards to the cost of it, right? And adultery?
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, he was afraid that people were going to take it from him. It was worth its weight in gold, and so there was so much corruption that had gone on, and there were substitutes that were being made, that King Henry VIII condemned to death any adulterers of the spice, of his share of spice. You know, and King Henry VIII was kind of like a hypochondriac in a lot of ways. I guess that's pretty well known, but a lot of these spices were used as a mixture to try and keep him from getting the plague.
Uh-huh. Ah, yes, yes.
Like nutmeg was part of that, and saffron was part of that, and he would make these concoctions, and then he was always trying to have a son, so as some of these spices had him become virile, he made an association from one plant to another, and then started using it until... you know, he conquered whoever was in front of him. He was a very virile man.
Yeah.
But whatever his combination was, It wasn't working for the males, but it was working.
Well, it's so fun the way that that you weave the plants and the history among themselves. And and we have to take a bit of a break. We need to come back and talk about the recipes that are in the book.
Okay.
And a little bit more specifically on some of the plants that you mentioned. So stay on the line. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
Hey.
In 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hey, did everybody like that sexy music? Jack, what do you want to tell us?
Carmen, your
that
voice
is
sounding very sexy right
I'm
now,
I'm trying
too.
To be.
It's actually a song that I made.
Oh, Jack. Good.
Jack, we'll talk later. anyway, we're here with Helen Yost. Plants with Benefits is her book, an uninhibited guide to the aphrodisiac herbs, fruits, flowers, and veggies in your garden. So, Helen, I want to talk about the fig. All right?
Yeah.
You know, Alice and I are very attached to the fig.
Yeah, and with, for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, that has a long history at so many levels. Tell us a little bit about its properties and its history as a as an aphrodisiac.
Well, we didn't have the benefit of knowing then what we know now, but it is packed with nutrients, with potassium and manganese and antioxidants, which are all helpful for a healthy plant with benefits, because it's going to help the libido. But it was also said to be Cleopatra's favorite food.
Mm, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Very sexy shape.
Yeah.
It had that, you know, honey-scented taste that you can't deny, and it has to be eaten fresh, and there's a lot of kind of... Yeah. Mystique to it, you know. You're not gonna. I have brown turkey, and I can't pick it and leave it more than a day. I wouldn't anyway. I'm ready to do something with it, but it has a long history of being a favored food by royal. Because again, if it was, I call that the Gucci effect, where people get kind of turned on if you feel like you're being served something that's expensive.
Yeah,
right.
Like
yeah.
Champagne
yeah.
or caviar if we weren't doing plants.
Right.
Actually, the potato at one time was considered an aphrodisiac, and I didn't put it in the book, but it was way before famines and everything else, rare.
Ah,
yeah.
Considered an aphrodisiac because of the Gucci effect, like, oh, baby, he must like me.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah
he
yeah.
gave me a potato.
The potato.
But also, like, think about the way the fig grows and when it's ready to be picked. I mean, the way it hangs off of the branch in itself is pretty suggestive.
It is indeed. And when you open it up, it's you know, kind of undeniably sexy with the actual flowers inside the plant like that.
And it has a very unique taste. I mean, you're right. It's tinged with honey, but it has a little bit of almost, I wouldn't say sour, but it has
there's
a tang.
There's some acidic there's or something
tang.
To it.
Yeah. And there's some, there's nothing. I always tell Alice stories about what people in my hometown would eat for breakfast. Figs were not rare, and then they still aren't rare there, fresh ones. It's ubiquitous, but you still appreciate it because it's such a unique taste and so rich and so many. It's kind of like olives, like, or mushrooms, a very specific kind of unique taste. You know, when you open it, we would eat figs and bread, Helen, all the time for breakfast till we were sick.
Yeah,
you know.
And where did you grow up?
In Italy. In southern Italy. So we would, some of them were the size of oranges there.
Yeah.
So you would pick them in the morning, still kind of warm from the morning sun.
Yeah.
Split them open with some crusty bread.
Oh, it's like this drippy.
It's so good.
Fleshy.
Honey.
Honey.
And when you get them dried, no way. It's like nothing.
No.
Nothing like the real thing, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing at all. So that to me is like number one in like aphrodisiac foods.
Yeah.
If I think of that and chocolate.
Yeah.
And then figs dipped in chocolate are like
A double whammy.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about mushrooms too, because the shape of mushrooms is pretty interesting.
Yes.
Well, and it is, it is the shape and how quickly they come up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just listed it as it being dangerously sexy. Dumas, the writer, Alexandre Dumas, noted it for its warming effects, like cayenne and cinnamon were, and that it was also combined with a lot of vitamins, rich in vitamin D and potassium. Potassium is key. Zinc is another key one to increase libido, particularly in men.
Zinc.
And so it's just, you know, it's a playful, it can also be very playful, you know, it's not... You know, you want to eat your asparagus and your mushrooms whole. Taking a knife to it kind of kills the mood, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yes. I was always wondering why my sister had a giant mushroom poster in her kitchen.
Yeah. Chop, chop.
Where did she disappear to?
Yeah. Another one that has some great shape for me, and even before... your book, cloves.
Cloves.
Oh, yeah.
You look at a clove closely and you go, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, it derived from the term nail and the sophomoric term of getting nailed.
Yeah.
All kind of relates to the aphrodisiac attributes of the clove. You know, I think I write in the book how lovingly my mother would put those clothes in the ham at Christmas.
Little did she know.
I'll do it. Everyone out of the kitchen, I'll do it. and fennel. You can't ignore fennel, right?
Fennel.
Yeah.
Now, that's another very distinctive taste that can't be denied. I would have thought shape, definitely, because it does have a beautiful shape to it, but its attributes were increasing the libido found in the estrogen effect, so it's in the hormone category.
Right.
And there were some studies done in the 1930s that confirmed that. So obviously our ancestors knew a little bit something that we didn't know. I mean, we can prove things by science, but they were just doing cause and effect.
Right.
That's the way I am with almonds. I can't be trusted around marzipan. I just can't. I just need to excuse myself.
Be alone.
It's enticing to me.
But I have to say, the recipe for fennel and onion marmalade.
That sounded really good.
Is amazing.
Yes. My friend at Calic Cottage Farm contributed this and the photograph as well. She's a kind of gardener to table person and blogs about it at Calic Cottage Farm.
Yeah, where did you? So I saw that you. I love that you credit where you get the recipes from.
Yes.
And how did you pick them? Is it just, have you tasted all of these? And
I did, and I tried them, and these are friends of mine that I have met, like you, at a buffet line, trying to, you know, get all the aphrodisiacs that we can or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so we just got to talking on the blog sphere, and I asked for a contribution.
And the lavender cookies? Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try that. It sounds amazing.
Now, that was my 13-year-old daughter, who is an aspiring writer. She's a very good writer and an editor. And so she actually edited the book for me before my editor got to it. And I said, honey, will you edit this for me before I send it to Kathy Dees, who's my wonderful editor? And she said yes, and she hands it back, and she says, we won't speak of this anymore.
Oh. That's awesome.
Well, I have to ask you, Helen, so most of the things are very good smelling and good tasting and and good feeling, but then you include garlic. Right.
Yeah, garlic. Who knew? The stinking rose.
Yeah.
And garlic, definitely, you both have to have it for it to have any effect, and it's definitely going to have a warming effect.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, even today, the Tibetan monks are forbidden to eat it because it causes arousal.
Oh!
Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's got a pretty long history of kind of get you in a receptive mood.
That's why they call it Italian gold. I mean,
there you go.
I don't think there's an Italian recipe that doesn't
have it. I know. Yeah. And then what else? I mean, it just drives you insane when you smell it. And everybody seems to love it when they're smelling it. Not everybody necessarily wants to eat it. But you do want to both have it at the same time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And it was also in your book, you mentioned that you explained why it works. It was called, in Russia, it was called the Russian penicillin.
Yes. It had a powerful antibiotic properties to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Louis Pasteur did some work with it, and that's what it was called, the Russian penicillin. And it was considered one of the hot herbs, like we said. And it's bona fide in the fact that it does increase blood circulation, and then that puts you in that receptive mode.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about watermelon.
I know, really. Don't you ever wonder who ate the first oyster?
Yeah.
Who figured, like, watermelon? How did they figure it out? It's the rind.
Yeah.
So, you know, and watermelons were used to carry, and the African nations carry across the desert. So that was a water supply. So, you know, you can't help but to wonder, like, okay, well, you know, we're out of our water supply. We're eating the rind now. And then you're kind of maybe getting close to not finishing your journey, so you're going to procreate. Because now the rind's kicking in.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
it's sort of like a flower, you know, it's going to bloom before it dies. I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to look at that further, but it is the rind. To me, like, you know, I do like pickled rind, but I love the tasty redness of the juice itself. So how did it become known unless it was by desperation? I don't know.
Yeah, I would
imagine.
Well,
yeah, and just even the form of it is just big and bulbous and like...
And heavy.
You kind of want to wrap your legs around it.
It's
right?
like it's a very pregnant fruit.
It's like a very...
You know what I mean? Like it's heavy. It's rich, you know?
It's like an avocado, you know? That's a sexy, you know?
Yeah.
I hope we all enter into this beautiful pear-shaped sexiness, or that we're appreciated for being sexy when we develop into our pear shape that we're going to live with the rest of our lives.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of beauty in that. You've got the fig, like you said, and the pear, and then the men are, of course, enjoying everything that's phallic-shaped, the carrots and the asparagus.
Yeah. Well, the book is really fun, and the amount of information that's chalked into these pages is... It's dizzying. It's such a joy to read. And, you know, I was thinking about it as I was making my chili, and I was like, it comes up in my thoughts a lot, your book, just from,
Woo-hoo!
You know, just from everyday stuff that's in your kitchen and, you know.
Yeah, and you don't think about, you know, I mean, because things do come to us. We can buy saffron, right, Helen, pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
We could buy any of the spices that turned Henry VIII on.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty inexpensively.
Right.
You know, so we don't think about their power.
Right.
No.
In the same way. And your book helps us to see that.
Right. It helps us to know what those are, you know, because
I think
we just
them.
Take them for granted and we don't think about them. But there's some really, really fun things in our cupboards.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a conversation starter about plants. I mean, next time you're at dipping into guacamole,
yeah,
you can say, hey, did you know?
I know. Exactly.
And I'll say, are you a virgin? Otherwise, you're not having...
that'll open up the conversation.
That's an icebreaker.
Among other things.
Well, Helen, thank you so much for being on the show. Congratulations on the great review from The Times. It's very well deserved, if I don't mind saying so myself.
Yeah.
Please keep writing. We'll be following you. Do you want to let our listeners know a little bit about your website and where they can find more of your writing and your work?
I can be followed on gardeningwithconfidence.com.
Uh-huh.
Great.
And we want to have you, let's have you back on to talk about the other benefits.
Gardening with Confidence.
Yeah, Gardening with Confidence.
Awesome. I'd love that.
And the butterfly gardening that you do and the pollinators, and I'd love to
And you have some great photos. You always post great photos as well.
Oh, yay.
On your site.
Great. Yeah, I love garden art, and I love anything to do outside. I'm actually getting ready to work on another book with St. Lin's Press, and I haven't been able to announce it yet, but it's back to being normal.
Well, you've got some big shoes to fill with after this one. So thanks for your book, and thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks, y'all. I appreciate it.
Okay. Happy gardening.
Well, please follow our Facebook page, too, to win prizes. Alice and I are going to give out some kind of sexy prize this week.
We'll find a sexy prize.
So tune in, follow us, listen to us on Stitcher as well. If you missed the show, you can also, you know, listen
Stitcher and iTunes.
And iTunes. Thanks for listening. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.